This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 250 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. On Saturday, June 8th, at 11 in the morning, as families and children were in the busy market in the densely populated Nuseirat refugee camp, Israeli warplanes and attack helicopters started circling overhead while Israeli special forces, using civilian vehicles, invaded the camp. According to eyewitness reports and documentation by human rights groups, the special forces raided two homes inside the camp, followed by attacks by Israeli tanks and quadcopters on three separate areas of the camp.
ايش في واحد خاصك انه
امي يا الله امي
اصبر اقعد في كم يسروه هيا طياره هيا كوت كابتر هيا.
Al-Mazen Center for Human Rights states that, quote, the ground assault coincided with Israeli warplanes directly striking five homes in the camp while their residents were still inside and intensively conducting airstrikes and fire belts in those three areas. Al-Mazen states, quote, the ground attack combined with the special unit's infiltration and relentless bombardment took place when Nuseirat camp's market was overcrowded with thousands of shoppers. It is important to note that Nuseirat shelters tens of thousands of forcibly displaced Palestinians from the eastern middle area and Rafah. The Israeli army announced that the attack was launched in order to release four Israeli captives who were taken at the Supernova Music Festival on October 7th. 274 Palestinians, including 64 children, were killed in the attack, which lasted around 75 minutes. According to initial information, Al-Mazen says that the overwhelming majority of those killed were targeted while at home or on the streets, with some being killed as they were trying to flee the Israeli attacks from the camouflaged civilian vehicles. Nearly 700 were wounded, including 153 children. Ambulance and rescue teams struggled to evacuate killed and injured Palestinians, many of whom had been shredded to pieces or decapitated by the bombing, the human rights groups report. Quote, this attack further proves Israel's dehumanization of Palestinians and blatant disregard for Palestinian life. The sheer scale of Palestinians killed and injured underscores a deliberate and callous indifference to Palestinian suffering, further emphasizing a systematic policy that views Palestinian lives as expendable, Al-Mazen stated. Al Jazeera Arabic documented testimonies of Palestinians who survived the massacre and attacks, and I will speak the subtitles for you in this next video. Vehicles with Palestinian number plates came as if they were bringing aid. All we got were soldiers and special forces in an area filled with displaced people. One person said, these are not Arabs, they're Jews. The plane was bombing houses of Muslims. They struck with many rockets. Within 10 minutes, they were at the entrance of our home and our neighbor next to us. They told me to confess or they would detain and shoot my kids. I said, I don't know anything. I don't know the resistance or have any weapons. Within a minute, in the other room, I hear the sound of gunfire. And that moment, my two sons were shot. My 12-year-old was killed. My other son is here. May God heal him. There are more than 14 people that are still under the rubble. The streets are filled with bodies. He is the only one that survived, he and his mother. The rest are gone. That was from Al Jazeera. Our contributor Ruweda Amar spoke to several eyewitnesses and survivors of the Nusayrat massacre. She writes that, quote, around 11 a.m., Ahmed Labad heard the sound of missiles falling one after the other. It was terrifying, he said. I hugged my children and screamed that we had to leave the house and take shelter in a school. As they left their home, we saw missiles exploding around us, he added. People were screaming and calling for an ambulance, he said. I did not look back or around me. Ahmed carried his children as they were too afraid to walk. It was only after 2 hours of extreme violence that Ahmed and his family could go back home. Many of my neighbors lost members of their family, he said. I cannot forget those moments, and I cannot believe that I saved my children from this terrible massacre. That was from Ruweda Amar's feature, There Was Blood Everywhere. Israeli jets and helicopter gunships also struck areas in nearby Deir al-Balah at the same time on Saturday. In Deir al-Balah, our contributor Abu Bakr Abed reported, quote, I opened my phone and started to film the attacks. A blast occurred nearby and it felt like my eardrums had been pierced. A building mere meters away had been targeted. Another airstrike destroyed a house in our area. Missiles kept falling around us. We could see U.S.-made Apache helicopters being flown low in the sky. From them, Israeli troops were shooting at civilians in the streets. Abu Bakr adds that, quote, I had a quick look out the window and saw people being displaced. Exhausted mothers carried their infants, children dragged bags containing a few belongings, older people coughed. Women wearing their prayer dresses implored God to protect everyone. The traffic seemed to be more chaotic than it had ever been. Cars and other vehicles carried hundreds of people who were seeking refuge, even though nowhere in Gaza is safe. Amid the chaos, it was difficult for ambulances to reach places that had been targeted and bring injured people to hospital. We live near Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah. I could hear people in that hospital screaming in grief and pain. A moment later, there were another couple of airstrikes toward the west. We panicked even more. We were ready for death. We expected that it would be our last day. I couldn't stand on my feet. We stayed close to each other in one room, hoping that this horror would end. Before I died, I felt I should have a look at my yellow rose. I water it every single day. I went to the balcony. It seemed the end was near. That was from Abu Bakr Abed's piece, Panic in Central Gaza. Abu Obeida, the spokesperson for the Qassam Brigades, the armed wing of Hamas, said that some Israeli captives were killed during the operation. Our colleague Maureen Claire Murphy wrote that Israel has so far not reported any fatalities among the captives during the raid. Abu Obeida said, quote, by committing horrifying massacres, the enemy was able to liberate a few of its prisoners, but at the same time, it killed some of them during the operation. The operation will constitute a major danger to the enemy's prisoners and will have a negative impact on their conditions and their lives, he added. Maureen added, quote, Israel has repeatedly accused Hamas of hiding among civilians to justify its targeting and destruction of civilian infrastructure, including hospitals in Gaza, while apparently using trucks disguised as humanitarian aid to carry out an operation that killed scores of civilians. Feigning civilian or non-combatant status, as Israeli forces appear to have done, and hardly for the first time, may constitute the war crime of perfidy under international humanitarian law, Maureen notes. The Israeli army habitually uses the tactic of disguising its soldiers as civilians in order to carry out extrajudicial assassinations and deadly raids, especially in the occupied West Bank. American intelligence units provided intelligence to the Israeli army for the Nusayrat operation. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan stated on the day of the raid and massacre that, quote, the United States is supporting all efforts to secure the release of hostages still held by Hamas, including American citizens. This includes through ongoing negotiations or other means. The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres stated at an international conference in Jordan on Tuesday that it was, quote, high time for a ceasefire along with the unconditional release of the remaining Israeli captives. but he made no mention whatsoever of the thousands of Palestinian hostages, many held for years without charge or trial, and many being systematically tortured in various Israeli prisons and concentration camps. For much more on Saturday's massacre in Nuseirat, read our reports by Maureen Claire Murphy, Rueda Amar, and Aboubakar Abed on electronicintifada.net. 2 days before Saturday's Nuseirat massacre that killed 274 and injured 700, Israeli forces bombed a United Nations school sheltering nearly 6,000 people inside the Nuseirat refugee camp, killing at least 40, including 14 children. Maureen Claire Murphy writes, quote, three prominent Palestinian human rights groups said that at least four missiles struck the southern building of the school in Nuseirat refugee camp. The Israeli-fired weapons, quote, directly penetrated the roof of the second and first floors, causing damage to several classrooms and leading to almost total destruction of the three-story building and destroying water tanks. Both the Washington Post and CNN reported that U.S.-supplied weapons were used in the deadly attack, which survivors said occurred without warning, Maureen adds. CNN stated that it had identified fragments, quote, of at least two U.S.-made GBU-39 small-diameter bombs in video filmed at the scene by a journalist working for CNN. The Washington Post analyzed verified footage recorded by an eyewitness that it said shows the distinctive nose cone of a GBU-39 bomb. Peter Lerner, the Israeli military's chief English language spokesperson, admitted that the deadly attack in Nuseirat was the fifth time in the last month that it had struck UN facilities on the pretext that they were being used as bases by Palestinian armed groups. At least 450 displaced people have been killed while sheltering in UN facilities since October 7th, according to UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees. Meanwhile, Maureen notes, Israel has previously lied about civilian infrastructure such as hospitals being used as military bases by Palestinian armed groups in an attempt to justify the attacks. And of course, Israel has turned UN schools and hospitals in Gaza into military barracks from which they may have conducted attacks on Palestinians. Our contributor Khulud Rabah Suleiman also reported on the bombing of the UN school in Nuseirat. She writes that a man she spoke with, Ahmed Hassanein, spent hours digging in the rubble trying to rescue people. Some of the scenes he witnessed were especially gruesome, she writes. Quote, he saw a boy gathering his sister's flesh before burying it in a pile of sand in the schoolyard. He saw an injured man tearing his clothes to pieces as he grieved for his family, most of whom had been killed. He saw a girl sitting in a corridor at the school, trembling in fear and with blood streaming down her leg. Ahmed asked her about her family. I don't know where they are, the girl replied. I don't know if they are still alive. Ahmed was speechless. He then took the girl to hospital. I still cannot get these scenes out of my head, Ahmed said. I sometimes have flashbacks. For much more, read Khulud Rabah Suleiman's feature, Slaughter in a School, and Maureen Claire Murphy's report, Israeli Bombing Kills Dozens Sheltering at UN School, on electronicintifada.net. Israeli airstrikes continued to target areas across Gaza over the last few days, including in Burej and Maghazi refugee camps in the central areas. On Tuesday, Palestinians captured this video of Israeli jets striking tents of displaced people on the beach in the El Zueida area in central Gaza.
Ya Allah, Ya Allah, Ya Allah, Ya Allah.
Palestinian health officials say that since the beginning of June, more than 800 people have been killed and more than 2,400 wounded in Israeli bombings, raids, and ground offensives across Gaza. Bryce de Levine, head of the Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières Emergency Unit, stated this week that, quote, since October and certainly before, the dehumanization of Palestinians has been a hallmark of this war. Catch-all phrases like war is ugly act as blinders to the fact that children too young to walk are being dismembered, eviscerated, and killed. Doctors Without Borders said that, quote, these attacks are the latest in a broad litany of atrocities and illustrate the type of war that Israel is fighting. Israel and its allies have repeatedly shown that there is no watershed moment or red line in this violence. The attacks, now known as the Flower Massacre, the Tent Massacre, or the killing of aid workers and their families, or the annihilation of hospitals and the health system more generally, have led to no more than weak diplomatic posturing, empty words, and staggering inaction. According to new statistics from the United Nations Satellite Imagery and Analysis Agency, 55% of all buildings in the Gaza Strip have been destroyed by the Israeli military. The Palestinian Central Bureau of Statistics warned that the accumulation of, quote, mountains of waste and rubble in Gaza is posing significant health and environmental risks in a statement for World Environment Day on June 5th. The Bureau added that the last 8 months of Israel's genocide and, quote, excessive indiscriminate destruction of the Palestinians and their resources has had a disastrous effect on all aspects of life in Gaza. Quote, dumping thousands of tons of explosive and toxic materials causes significant pollution of soil, water, and air, which negatively affects ecosystems and public health and exposes them to threats. In addition, the destruction of environment facilities such as wastewater treatment plants and desalination plants impedes the community's ability to withstand and manage water resources, which exacerbates the risk of drought and the shortage of clean and potable water. The Palestinian Bureau of Statistics added that, quote, the United Nations Development Program estimates that at least 270,000 tons of waste, 170,000 tons in the south and 100,000 tons in the north, have accumulated in temporary landfill sites recently that established by municipalities in close proximity to residential areas due to the lack of viable options. However, these wastes have no way to sanitary landfills except by burning or accumulation. The Gaza municipality, which, as we showed you last week, has been organizing ad hoc community efforts to clear as much rubble and debris as possible, reports that its crews have been collecting and transporting garbage and other waste to the eastern part of Gaza City. It said that along with the lack of fuel necessary to collect waste, the occupation's destruction of vehicles and the occupation's prevention of municipal crews from reaching the main landfill east of the city, large quantities of waste has been left to accumulate in the streets. The Geneva-based Euromed Human Rights Monitor stated this week that the Israeli army's destruction of hospitals and medical facilities in northern Gaza and the complete shutdown of the remaining partially operational ones amounts to a decision for mass execution of patients. Quote, with the shutdown of these hospitals, all medical facilities in northern Gaza are now out of service. There are no places left to treat the wounded or sick. Maternal and child health programs are completely halted, Euromed added. Following the two massacres in Nusayrat refugee camp this past week, doctors and medical staff at the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in nearby Deir el-Balah in central Gaza say that the hospital has been functioning on just one remaining generator, and if it breaks down, the medical facility would be forced to close. The health ministry in Gaza said that the hospital generators are breaking down because of the blockade, preventing fuel, of course, but also preventing the spare parts to repair them. On June 10th, the ministry warned that the only oxygen station in the Gaza governorate, which supplies health facilities and chronically ill patients with oxygen, could stop functioning due to the shortage of fuel. And finally, we wanted to bring you some images and videos from journalists and others in Gaza who are not just relentlessly documenting the unspeakable atrocities, but also making sure to highlight the resilience, joy, and determination of the Palestinian people. Abdulaziz Mohammed, a volunteer with the Palestine Red Crescent Society's ambulance crews, took a selfie with his colleagues in their ambulance this week and posted it to Twitter with the caption, "The voice of truth is much stronger than the sound of the weapon." Physicians and medical staff at the Al-Ahli Baptist Hospital in Gaza City posed for a photo to commemorate obtaining brand new scrubs this week. A massive crowd gathered in central Gaza to help free a bird that became entangled in wires.
Guys, the situation in Gaza is so bad that a bird tried to commit suicide, but we won't let it. The bird is tangled in a power line and we're trying to free it. See all these people? They're all gathered to save the bird. That guy almost sacrificed himself to save the bird. If he touches a power line, he'll be meeting God.
And award-winning journalist Maha Husseini posted this photo of kids she met who had just finished a lesson with their teacher in a shelter. Maha, who has been on this live stream before, won a 2024 Courage in Journalism Award from the International Women's Media Foundation on Monday. Mabruk from all of us at the Electronic Intifada, Maha. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our phenomenal and brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.